Life Audio.
Welcome to Christian Natural Health with naturopathic Dr. Lauren DeVille. Christian Natural Health is the podcast on how to get and stay healthy, God's way. You'll hear topics on nutrition, exercise, sleep, avoiding toxicity, meditating on scripture, what supplements to take, stress management, defeating anxiety and worry, how to reconcile Eastern medicine approaches with Christianity, and a whole lot more. Now, here's your host, Dr. Lauren.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Welcome back to another episode of Christian Natural Health. Today, I'm excited to have Sally Norton with us. Sally K. Norton is a distinguished expert in dietary oxalates with 35 years of health education and research experience. She holds a nutrition degree from Cornell University and a master's degree in public health from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Her path to becoming a leading expert on dietary oxalate includes a prior career working at prestigious medical schools in medical education and public health research. Sally championed a five-year National Institute of Health funded program at UNC Medical School that educated students and faculty about holistic, alternative, and integrative healing. Her personal healing experience inspired years of research, culminating in the release of her groundbreaking book, Toxic Superfoods, which was released in January 2023 and is available everywhere books are sold. Welcome, Sally. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay, so for people who are not familiar with oxalates, let's start there. Tell us what they are and why we care.
Yeah, actually, nobody knows what they are.
Right.
The heck is an oxalate, right? It's a little chemical that's very abundant in nature. Plants make a lot of it. Soil funguses make it. Polluted air makes it. It starts off as oxalic acid, which is this end product. It's a two carbon molecule with four oxygens on it. It's so tiny that we don't have a way to metabolize it and break it down and make it untoxic. And you can breathe it in polluted cities and in moldy rooms because Aspergillus, the black mold, one of the major aflatoxins is oxalic acid. So, and plants are pretty good at making oxalate, although it's really divergent. The way they make it, how much they're making of it, what forms they're putting it in. Really interesting. The plants need the oxalic acid, and they what happens with oxalic acid is it's an acid that has a charge on it, and it can have two charges because there's two places where hydrogens can disappear. Then you have these negative charges, and when there's the two empty negative charges, it fits very nicely with things like calcium. So in nature, it tends to go towards calcium oxalate. So now you have this salt bond that creates this molecule that likes to structure up as crystals. All salts tend to crystallize, and you get 8 or 10 pairs of them, and they crystallize into a seed nanocrystal, and the nanocrystal is incredibly toxic. So is the acid itself. And the nanocrystals are often, they grow into microcrystals. Plants build specific shapes of these microcrystals. They put out a scaffolding made of amino acids. And different amino acids have this tendency to have calcium bonds. And so calcium oxalate sticks beautifully to amino acids, and you can build specific structures. And plants build some of them in this toothpick shape. It's a double pointed arrow that's designed as a defense weaponry. Plants actually invented warfare.
Yeah, absolutely. They're trying not to get eaten. So, and what foods are high in oxalates?
The sort of poster child is spinach. And then beet greens and Swiss chard. And beet greens and Swiss chard is actually the same plant. and rhubarb. And the rhubarb leaf is so concentrated in oxalate that it's pretty much a murder weapon. If you go to boil up rhubarb leaves and thinking it's Swiss chard, you have a 98% chance of being dead the next day. So it's pretty toxic. And then other plants that we're eating as foods that tend to be high in oxalate include the beetroot as well. Sweet potatoes, which was, I thought, my best friend for years. The baking potato.
Yeah.
The nuts, especially almonds, cashews, and peanuts. A couple berries, blackberries and raspberries, are terrible. Star fruit is known to slay people. Very high in oxalate. There's quite a bit of research on star fruit poisoning. Chocolate, the dark cacao element in chocolate is loaded with not just lead and theobromide, but you've got your oxalic acid in there too. And then the pseudo grains, when you go on a gluten-free diet, you tend to put these higher oxalate foods like quinoa, teff, buckwheat, arrowroot. These things are much higher in oxalate than wheat is. That's in the bran. When a bran, you know, grains are basically a seed, and seeds have these coats and layers to them. And one of the outer layers around the bran area is loaded with oxalate crystals. And so the bran, the whole grains, are much higher in oxalate than the refined grains. So it kind of makes sense that humans have been eating white rice and white flour and refining grains, because it removes a lot of indigestible chaff that's actually bad for us.
So let me clarify really quick. So it sounds like you're saying that oxalates are bad across the board. Is that accurate? Do you think that everybody...
It's a poison like other poisons, and we're designed to handle exposure to oxalate to a small degree. The kidney researchers who've been trying to work this out for years and spending generations of millions and zillions of dollars have decided that we tolerate about 25 milligrams of oxalate in the kidneys a day. And your liver produces oxalate from vitamin C breakdown and some connective tissue breakdown and inflammation. So you produce about 12, and you can handle about 25. So you can handle, you absorb about 10%, maybe 15% if you have healthy gut. So if you up that balance of 15, you can have, let's say, 15 milligrams safely every day in your kidneys. That if you're a 10% absorber, that's 150 milligrams in your diet. So 150 milligrams and 150, 100 to 200 is considered normal consumption of oxalate by researchers. That's what they say we're consuming. Now, an ounce of almonds is about 70 milligrams. So you're halfway there with a small handful of almonds. Dark chocolate is close to that too. A 1 ounce piece of chocolate is close to that amount. A standard spinach smoothie is somewhere between about 750 and 1,000 milligrams of oxalate. So that's 10 times, 10 times beyond what the researchers say we're equipped to handle.
Well, and so you're talking about what the kidneys can handle, but we also have other mechanisms for excretion via the stool. Isn't that the primary excretion route?
No, the primary excretion route is the kidneys. 90% of oxalate is coming, according to researchers, which, you know, our research and our ideas about oxalate are highly imperfect. But 90% of all oxalate's coming out through the urine. That's the standard thing. Now, I think we could refine that, because it's very clear that there are multiple excretion routes for oxalate. Your saliva will reflect the level of oxalate in your blood. So after a meal, it takes about 4 or 5 hours to get that absorptive peak. But, you know, food takes about 24-hour transit time. And you already get enough oxalic acid in your blood within 40 minutes of a spinach smoothie to demonstrate damage to the circulating white blood cells. So they're now putting out pro-inflammatory cytokines 40 minutes after a spinach smoothie. And you still have, you haven't got the peak is 3 hours later. You still haven't got the highest quantity of oxalate in your bloodstream. So it's going from your gut between the gut cells, because it's paracellular transit, getting into the bloodstream, already affecting the vascular tissue and the blood cells themselves. That's been established. And it goes immediately to the liver. 100% of the oxalate you absorb, which is variable based on how permeable your gut is. You can have absorption rates of 60% instead of 15 or 10. And so you don't even need a high oxalate diet to be overexposed to oxalate. So now the path of exposure has been your gut, your vascular tissue, your blood tissues, now your liver, which has to use up its glutathione to protect itself from the oxalic acid oxidative stress and the cellular damage that it creates. And then your blood flows from the liver up just a couple inches to the heart. And the heart tissues are now getting not just what you absorb from your diet, but what you also produce from your inflamed liver. And then that's pumped to your lungs and then your heart and then back out to peripheral circulation. Yeah. And later, now the kidneys get a chance to excrete it for you.
Sure.
And as the levels go up in the blood and acidity goes up and the kidney starts stressing, that can turn on transporters where you start excreting it back through into the colon. And they believe that in this paracellular transit, as you're absorbing it, the cells try to grab it, some of it, and kick it back into the lumen of the gut to try to limit how much you absorb. But the more damage your gut, those transporters break down. They can't function.
Right.
Because you get this acidity and other problems where the protein shapes are changing in cell membranes and they're not working as well. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Right. And with constant exposure in the gut, with not just the oxalates, there's other anti-nutrients in plants that have the potential to cause a lot of gut problems over time.
Well, and I like what you brought out there, the fact that there's a lot of the elevated levels of oxalates aren't necessarily coming just from our food. It's also the fact that if the gut is leaky, now you're going to have excess amounts from that. And you're also, you mentioned earlier, the black mold. So sometimes if there's a fungal problem, you're going to have excess amounts from that. So there's a lot of other components to it. It's from the food itself, potentially, if the levels are super high. I am curious about the research, if maybe you could share that, that's saying that most of the excretion is coming from the kidneys, because my understanding was calcium binds to the oxalates and that's going to go through the stool. And it's when you don't have enough calcium or when the gut is inflamed that you're going to end up excreting it more through the kidneys. And that's how people end up with things like calcium oxalate, kidney stones, and things like that, right? Yeah.
The idea of excretion usually means excreting it from internal body tissues. And what you're talking about is preventing absorption.
Right, exactly.
So the idea of absorption is a food, an element in the food moving from the lumen of the gut into the bloodstream and the body tissues.
Right.
So we don't use the term excretion for things that you're just not absorbing. So that would be, that's not the concept that fits the situation. So yeah, we want to lower absorption rates as much as we can.
Sure.
Unfortunately, most people aren't at the 10 to 15% that's considered normal. Many, many people are at hyperabsorptive levels.
Right.
So even a normal oxalate diet of 200 milligrams a day could be quite dangerous over time.
Sure.
Now, the thing is, the body is really, really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And when the blood levels are high, it knows the heart is at risk because it is chelating calcium, and you can cause a drop in calcium levels in the bloodstream.
Yeah.
The pacemaker doesn't like that.
Yeah.
And you can cause lots of problems like that. So the body's quick to, there's a combination of passive accidental sticking of oxalate to tissues. Because any cells that are in the process of duplicating because of normal maintenance and reproduction are in a state where they're sticky to oxalate. So wherever you're healing something, wherever you have inflammation, wherever you have infection, wherever you have problems and issues or growth or maintenance happening, those tissues are stickier to oxalate. And oxalate starts sticking onto membranes and tissues. If you have vascular or, you know, excuse me, but the subcellular organelles, the vesicles and stuff kind of sprayed out because the cell is broken or dying, that tissue creates a situation where the soluble oxalic acid starts precipitating out its calcium oxalate. So you tend to get this collection or accumulation in areas of the body that are under stress. And this is a silent process where you don't get symptoms.
Right. Yeah.
The body's doing everything it can to keep you from having symptoms and keeping it out of harm's way.
Yeah, and as you say, it's very smart and it's got all these mechanisms in order to do all of that. But yeah, so it sounds like because the vast majority of people do have gut issues, the natural elimination via the gut is often compromised. So yeah, in my practice, a lot of times I will see people come in with oxalate sensitivity and they usually also have sulfur sensitivity. And a lot of times they have methylation pathway backups and things like that. So they're eating like five foods and it becomes really restrictive and difficult. So a lot of times, like the initial approach, I certainly agree, is you want to minimize the foods that are causing you problems while you're healing the reason why that problem was there in the first place, so that hopefully you can broaden your diet and not have to remain on such a restrictive diet over a long period of time. What's your thoughts on restrictive diets generally, oxalates or sulfates or anything else?
Oh, there's a lot in that. And I tell you, when I first started realizing that those of us who are doing the right thing and eating our sweet potatoes every day and can't figure out what's wrong with us and are falling apart and losing our careers and, you know, in crutches and wheelchairs and all the stuff I've been through, none of us, all the naturopaths I knew, all the homeopaths I knew, all the acupuncturists I knew, all the medical doctors I knew, I worked in a medical community. I worked at that interface between integrated medicine and medicine. Nobody could help me. I couldn't help myself. So when I went out to start teaching this for free in my community, I made an effort to spend a lot of time and money on food and bring them food and show them the low oxalate vegetables and fruits they could eat.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm the last person who would say, oh, I want to take away food is me.
Mm-hmm.
The sad part is what has become painfully obvious is that because we're being raised on peanut butter and potatoes and sweet potatoes and chocolate willy-nilly, completely unaware of the oxalates and even the lectins. Like, I didn't even know from college that you can't slow cook lectins. You cannot put your beans in a slow cooker and have that turn out okay. Mm-hmm. That ruined my gut. And I went to Cornell and I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So the sad part is our ignorance level is high enough that we can maybe don't get out of childhood, enter adulthood with a healthy gut. And the gut is a big place where the immune system is functioning.
Yep, absolutely.
And we start deranging the immune system as we damage the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And oxalate is not only an immune toxin, which is established, it is an established neurotoxin. Mm-hmm. Half of your nervous system is in the gut. So it's unfortunately, because we're not paying attention to this, we end up with this overreactive immune system, this deranged immune system that's getting trained left and right. There's lots of other assaults that we're giving the immune system these days. And so people do end up in this position where things are bothering the heck out of them. In order for them to get out of bed, they have to limit their foods.
Sure.
I would like us to be in a prevention mindset so we don't get to that point. And you can't be in a prevention mindset if you don't have this information.
It's true. Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like it's just like you have to intervene somewhere and you have to start by getting your body to the place where you're not in pain and you're able to rebuild. And then you can actually get to the point where you get healthy enough that some of these things won't be so toxic to you. Is that accurate, would you say?
Well, lowering your toxicity level is key to giving your body a chance at healing.
Right, right.
And the truth is that because the sequestration is going on, maybe starting in fetal life and in early childhood, if you start being given sweet potatoes and pureed beets as an infant, mm-hmm. you're already in a sequestration mode where oxalates are accumulating in your thyroid gland. By the time you're 50, you have at least an 85% chance of having visible, frank oxalate crystals in your thyroid gland.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with, you can't just stop the acute exposure with every meal and get totally better. Because once you lower the acute exposure, the body's like, thank God, now I can unload this from my thyroid gland and my bone marrow and my tendons. It tends to collect in fascia. It tends to cause connective tissue issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my feet and legs are continuing to remove oxalate. My back is continuing to remove oxalate. I'm in my 11th year of mm-hmm. deaccumulation of oxalate through the diet.
Mm-hmm.
And it has severely affected my immune system. And I am severely overreactive to everything. And frank immune tests say, most of the fruits, most of this, that's an end product of the oxalate damage. If mm-hmm. you keep eating the oxalate and wait to be broken, mm-hmm. that broken state is pretty hard to come back from.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I think we've mentioned before too, that as there's oxalate toxicity, that also tends to deplete sulfate, which then means that you're not going to produce enough glutathione and you're not going to be able to detox adequately either. So toxicity from other things usually kind of goes hand in hand with this. Is that accurate, would you say?
Well, I think one of the things that hasn't been studied enough, and hopefully we will, is that I think oxalate helps us retain lead and heavy metals because it's a chelator. So as you're building up this oxalate load, you're building up a load of mercury, aluminum, lead, and heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
And you are losing nutritional elements of all kinds. You're wasting sulfur, you're wasting potassium, calcium, magnesium. And there's a severe mineral depletion. And mm-hmm. in that mineral depleted state, you are more likely to pick up the chlorine, bromine, and junk in the water. You're more likely to pick up toxic metals from anywhere. And so it puts you in this really vulnerable space.
Sure. Yeah. And then also if you have the sulfur deficiency, then you have to have your methylation cycle compensate for that. And then you're not going to have enough left over to make metallothionein, which does chelate the heavy metals for sure. So a lot of these people, I agree, tend to also be really elevated in heavy metals too. So there's usually multiple layers.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation because as you deaccumulate oxalates, you're deaccumulating heavy metals potentially. But I have found that goes pretty well if you don't force the body to do what you want it to do. That there's a lot of mechanisms in place for healing and recovery, especially from oxalate, because the body has some inherent knowledge of it because oxalate's been part of the natural world since the dawn of the natural world.
Right. And are there also, like, as people are detoxing from oxalates, do you have some specific things that can help them with that detoxification process that you recommend?
Yeah, it's really critical. I have a whole couple of chapters on that in Toxic Superfoods.
Yeah.
Calcium and citrate are the most important things of all. Yep. Calcium is obviously has to keep getting replaced because you're going to continue to waste calcium as you mobilize oxalate from the tissues and you re-release oxalic acid into the bloodstream. Yeah. You're still causing losses of calcium in the blood. People sometimes have such severe arrhythmias and hypertensive attacks. They end up in the emergency room because they're deaccumulating oxalate. So the calcium is really important for that. It's also important to protect the kidneys. It helps you do this gut excretion. So the calcium is there as a magnet to help that gut excretion and really give your kidneys a break. And it helps to calm the nervous system and deal with this general deficiency that we have that adds to neurological problems that can lead to memory problems and mood problems.
Right.
And the citrate is fairly fascinating too, because citrate is alkalizing and all this inflammation that goes with crystals everywhere. And the deaccumulation of crystals is a very inflammatory process. It requires immune cells to go in there and be the hazmat workers that drill out these crystals out of your tissues and make kind of a mess in the process and increase your cytokine levels. And so you've got this inflammation and that tends to create more acidity. It's bad enough you're throwing an acid back into the bloodstream, but now you're creating inflammation that adds acidity. So the citrate helps to cut the acidity and it helps to soften the crystals because the chemical bond between citrate and calcium is stronger than the chemical bond between calcium and oxalate. So when citrate sits on a calcium oxalate molecule, it softens something that's as hard as quartz, because calcium oxalate crystals are harder than your teeth. It softens it to something more like chalk. Yet chewing on the crystals and plants literally wears down the teeth. Yeah, and it causes mechanical abrasion. And so you don't want to be immune cell breaking up a quartz crystal. You want to break up a chalk crystal. So it's really, citrate's so important because it is the chelator that holds the minerals to the matrix of the bones and teeth. And so with the citrate and the calcium and replacing minerals generally, trace minerals and so on, it's pretty easy to start reversing osteopenia and osteoporosis on a low oxalate diet if you're providing some potassium and some citrate.
Yeah. And what are some of your favorite ways to determine whether oxalates are a problem for someone? Do you have like testing that are your go-tos?
Well, in most toxicity diseases, most all we have is an evaluation of exposure levels and symptom patterns and risk factors. So that's the standard in toxicology kind of thing. So I've have available for free on my website and in the book Toxic Superfoods, an inventory where you can look at your risk factors. Do you have leaky gut? Do you have kidney failure and so on? Look at your exposure level. Here are all the high oxalate foods. Have these been in your life on and off or on a lot? And here's all the different ways it can show up when you start finally getting symptoms for it. And when you see that pattern of, one or two or three major high oxalate foods have been my daily darlings. And I have these gout and arthritis and fatigue and vision problems and backaches or cloudy urine, then you're like, okay, we'll try it. And then the definitive thing is, how do you do on the diet? It tells us a lot.
Yeah. And so what's your opinion of like oxalate urine testing and things like that, oat testing, urinary organic acid and stuff like that?
It's a double-edged sword because it's helpful. If you get a high oxalate test, you can believe that there's a lot of oxalate in your urine. Unless you've just been downing so much vitamin C that the vitamin C in your urine is turning into oxalate. You have to preserve that urine properly with a high amount of hydrochloric acid to make sure that you're getting an accurate measure. So it has to be specifically designed to be accurately done.
Yeah,
but you can get a false negative very easily. I had that. I am very oxalate poisoned, and the oat test showed me I was perfect in every way and did not have an oxalate problem. I can explain why, but you know, if you a negative oat test does not say you don't have an oxalate problem, not in the least. In fact, a negative oat test may suggest that you're so toxic that the body can no longer excrete oxalate.
Interesting. Yeah, that
definitely. Or you're just in this period of protecting your kidneys because you go up and down and up and down with your oxalate excretion, especially when you're oxalate toxic. So you get pathological spikes and then nothing, up and down, up and down. So it's easy to get a day where you're taking a rest from oxalate excretion.
Yeah. And so what are some of the symptoms, like some of the most common symptoms that people can experience if they have an oxalate issue?
Digestive conditions are considered a hallmark, or were considered when they first named this problem of dietary oxalate poisoning. It was 1842. And the original diagnosis, the most simple form of it was, is there a gut problem that also has either rheumatological problems or neurological problems? So the neurological problems are sleep trouble, mood problems, becoming an annoying human being who's like neurotic. That was like a symptom of oxalate poisoning because it is so neurotoxic. And neuro poisoning can mean things like fibromyalgia too, because it's really the nerves that can't settle down that are on fire that are causing muscle knots and causing tremors and twitches and even certain degree of dysmotility and spasm with sphincters and so on can be neurotoxicity. I never knew a lot of this before I did the research. I was having hiccups every night, you know, after my day of sweet potatoes and everything. But at bedtime, you're 4 hours past dinner, you're 6-8 hours after lunch, and you're really toxic. And I was having every night really bad hiccups. And when I was reading in the starfruit literature about the deaths of starfruit and the tests on rats and stuff, the final symptom when the rats die of oxalate poisoning from starfruit juice is hiccups. And same with some of the human cases. One of the last symptoms they had before they expired was hiccups. I was like, oh, hiccups are neurotoxicity. So that's a neurotoxicity example. And then the rheumatological examples are gout, arthritis, aches and pains, tendonitis, bursitis, all that kind of ucky stuff with your joints and so on, even TMJ. Then there's vision issues. If you're starting to have trouble with night vision, or, you know, getting eye issues, or getting, you know, grit or floaters, because the eyes are very prone to oxalate accumulation just as much as the thyroid gland. And they're part of the brain and nervous system. And I think the fluids of the eyes and the fluids around the eye tissues are one of the ways that the brain is detoxing junk from the brain tissues.
Makes sense. So what have I not asked you that you want to make sure you leave with our audience?
Well, you know, I would have loved to talk about how even biblically the Bible tells us things like basically eating plants was the symbol of our great fall, where now we live on cursed grounds and painful labor requires us to produce thorns and thistles, and that plants became a form of punishment. And that's become clear for those of us who have identified oxalate toxicity as the key thing that's been really dogging our health, that there are plenty of older cultural ideas that might balance today's current culture that is so embracing plants to the nth degree that we're leaving no caution and no sides for two-sided conversation about the potential downsides of overloading on plants.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can people go to learn more about you?
I have a website that is sallykeynorton.com. There's a lot of free information in there. And you'll be able to find a cookbook if you want to learn how to work with a turnip or a rutabaga. There's lots of plant recipes in that cookbook. We're coming out with a companion to Toxic Superfoods for people who really want to get into the nitty gritty of more data on the oxalate in foods. And I have a YouTube channel. We're sharing testimonials and so on there. That's a lot of fun. People are enjoying that. And I'm also on Instagram. But yeah, the website's the place to find me.
And your YouTube is what?
What's Sally K. Norton.
There we go. All right. So I'm going to link all that in the show notes. And thank you so much. This has been really entertaining and interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Are you looking for a holistically minded healthcare practitioner who truly treats root cause rather than symptom suppression? Unfortunately, even in the alternative healing professions, this isn't a given. That's why I've created wholehealthdoctor.com, a resource to help connect patients to healthcare practitioners in their area who share a root cause philosophy. Alternatively, most of the practitioners listed also practice telehealth. So if there isn't anyone local to you, you can still find a great practitioner to help you regain optimal health. Go to wholehealthdoctor.com. That's wholehealthdr.com. Type in your location or just the specialty that you're looking for and find the practitioner who's right for you.
Thanks for listening to Christian Natural Health. This show is run by you, so please write in with topic and guest suggestions for future shows. For more great content, subscribe to Dr. Lauren's blog at www.drlaurendeville.com or follow her on Facebook or Twitter at Dr. Lauren Deville. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share it with your friends and give us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It really helps us to stand out so other people can discover great content as well. Have a great week and God bless you.
Often we believe our questions mean we don't have faith, but I believe Jesus loves our questions. Our questions are windows into heaven. I'm Caden Fabrizio, and on the Questions with Caden podcast, we ask and answer one question per episode as relevantly and biblically as possible. Questions about fear, anxiety, depression, addiction, and so much more. Don't worry, your questions, they're not going to scare Jesus. So ask away. Listen and subscribe now at lifeaudio.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.